This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney.
I'm running to be the next governor for the state of Ohio.
Much to no one's surprise, Richard Cordray enters the race for Ohio governor. How's the race shaping up with less than a year to go? Also on today's show...
Well, this is an epic fail. I am outraged. I think that this revelation calls into question all the work that's been done.
Auditor Dave Yost on the news that a consultant who played a key role in Ohio's new medical marijuana program had past drug convictions. Joining us to discuss this week's top stories in the tri-state are Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau reporter Joe Ingles, WCPO.com reporter Lisa Bernard-Kuhn, and WVXU Politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Lisa, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Howard, good to see you.
Thanks.
And Joe, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Awesome to be here.
Joe, why don't you start us off by telling us what the latest on the Ohio medical marijuana program is. What's causing this latest controversy to erupt?
Okay, well, earlier this week, at the end of last week, they started to come out with these cultivator licenses. These are the people who are allowed to grow marijuana for the medical marijuana program. And they started to name some people, and some of the folks who weren't chosen said, wait a minute, this doesn't quite smell right. So they started searching around, and lo and behold, it turns out that one of the consultants who was hired to do the scoring that determines who gets these cultivator licenses, and there's only 12 of them for the large scale and 12 of them for the smaller scale one. And when they got down to it, one of these consultants had a criminal background and had been convicted of drug charges. Immediately, that called into question everything that had been done. There were lawmakers, even some that were on the panel that approved the medical marijuana program. And they were saying, you know, we've got to stop this. We've got to put a halt to it. We've got to do an investigation. Why didn't we know about this guy's drug charges? Why are we, you know, we've got to be able to guarantee that these licenses are actually awarded on the up and up. So that's put this in motion. Right now, the way it stands is we're still trying to figure out, you know, what state leaders are indeed going to do with these. There's a lot of questions. Do they do a full investigation, and how do they go about this? And we're still kind of waiting to see how this all works out.
Are there any lawsuits being threatened over this?
Yes, there are lawsuits being threatened over it. Those are coming, at least the one is coming from... They're looking at it. They're in the getting in the discovery phase, you know, trying to figure out what to file. They haven't really actually filed it, but they're looking at filing the lawsuit against the state over the way these licenses have been awarded. They really feel like the state is playing favorites, that they are going for the people who are, you know, connected with the government. And, you know, ironically, the thing in 2015, when medical marijuana was on the ballot, possibly the biggest complaint against that program that was on the ballot was that it was a monopoly. And we saw, you know, a whole debate over this monopoly thing. And ironically, now the people who didn't get this license and felt like they should have are saying, hey, look, there's still a monopoly. It's just that the government is getting to determine the winners and losers instead of, you know, someone else.
Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it does seem like they're kind of making this up as they go along.
It does have that feel.
Yeah. And the fact that this fellow has drug convictions really does not instill a lot of confidence in the system. It's already gotten dragged into the governor's race to a certain extent, too.
Yeah. And as Joe was saying, you have to question, how did this person with drug convictions and his background get on this kind of a panel, get into this kind of a consulting position? Lisa, when is the program supposed to actually go into effect? It's what, September of next year?
Yeah, September of 2018. The potential legal action, you know, the lawsuit that Joe was referencing and we were just talking about, You know, that's being threatened by Cincinnati-based investor James Gould and his group, Canascend. Go back to 2015, he was one of the lead investors marching forward the effort to legalize recreational and medical marijuana all at the same time. He stayed in this game, you know, throughout, seen it out. His firm was denied an application to be a grower. But as they began digging in, you know, he was the first one to sort of start raving, you know, waving a red flag saying, we think this is a flawed process. You know, what he outlined to us and largely the media last Friday was several concerns that the state provided. They're alleging that the state provided information to at least one of these cultivator applicants that gave them a competitive advantage, that information wasn't given to any other applicants, that the state overlooked major flaws in some of the applications that were awarded licenses, like overlooking key things like background checks on these individuals that would have been a part of a team that would be growing medical marijuana. And so some of the irony here is that, you know, if any one of these teams that filed an application to be a medical marijuana grower would have had someone with a felony conviction on their record, their application would have been thrown out immediately. So, you know, these guys, they have a lot of complaints, and I think we're going to continue to see more pop up as they go through this discovery process.
Lisa, do you think?
And you know, the interesting thing here, too, to add on to what Lisa just said, is I asked for the request for proposal for the consultant who actually did the work. You know, what did you ask of these folks? They never asked a question on there about past convictions of any kind. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of interesting because, like, as Lisa said, they were asking about the growers and other people, but not the consultants.
What has been the response? The Ohio Department of Commerce oversees this, if I understand correctly. What have they had to say about this, Joe?
Well, they haven't had much to say, honestly, but they did say that all the consulting companies that they chose met the standards provided within their contracts. And again, not requiring them to be to make any statement about if they've got convictions in their past. And the Department of Commerce says anyone who didn't receive a license, they have the right to appeal the decision.
If some of these things are going to be determined in court, in court cases, that September 2018 date really doesn't mean very much, does it?
Right, right. It looks like when you talk to all these lawmakers down here, the people who are upset, I'm just going to say it's, you know, this whole thing is not going away next week.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of questions, and it very well could be held up in court past that September 2018 date.
Well, not just held up, but is there any danger that this derails the entire program?
Yes, there really is. Because, the thing is, the longer this goes on, the more chance you have of someone from the outside, another group, like Responsible Ohio, but a different group, not necessarily that group again. But someone who wants to have medical marijuana could go out, could get the petition signatures, could put it on the ballot, and take it to the ballot to the people to decide. That's, you know, something that very well could happen, especially if you get in a long, protracted court battle over it.
And Lisa, what are your thoughts? Could this eventually lead to this program just falling apart?
Well, we've definitely seen in other states that, you know, once you have enough bumps in the road, things do begin to unravel. James Gould's group has already said, look, we're going to pursue this legal challenge, but if we don't get enough answers there, we're also going to pursue another ballot initiative that we wouldn't shy away from that. So he sort of already made that pledge. I mean, the other big concern here is if you're an investor, whether you've already been awarded a cultivation license, you've invested in a dispensary license, there are people who have invested hundreds of thousands, if not amassed millions of dollars, to try to get into this market. And the longer that this gets drawn out, the less likely they're going to put that money at risk, and they could decide to pull out altogether. And that's another way that the whole market could unravel.
Right.
You know, Ohio is not the first state to legalize medicinal marijuana. Did they base their program on anybody else's models that were successful, or did they just come up with their own set of rules for this?
Well, they did look at other programs and how they were structured, but they took the other programs and they tried to figure out the flaws in them, or at least this is what we're told, that they tried to figure out the flaws in them, and that Ohio's program is trying to address some of those other flaws so that our program is better. But the thing is that it's really uncharted territory, and and we don't know if what the federal government's going to do. You know, it looks like Jeff Sessions has been saying, you know, we want to really crack down on this. And if the feds come in and start making it much harder for states to do this, then that's another wrinkle in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that brings up an article, Lisa, that you wrote at WCPO.com that making medical marijuana legal in Ohio is going to require breaking a few laws at the beginning. So I'm wondering if you can explain about that.
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, essentially every state that has gone down this path and legalizing marijuana in some form, whether it's recreational or medical, there's this question about how do you get that first seed legally? How do you get it in the ground? Where do you get your first plants? Because if you're in a state where it isn't legal, you have to go out of state to acquire your product. It's illegal then to bring that back across state lines. Or you have to potentially strike a deal with somebody who's already working in your state and growing illicitly. And yet again, you know, you're breaking the law there. So, you know, it's just so ironic. And this is what you run into when you have a product that's legal at a, you know, patchwork of laws on a state level, but federally illegal. The first thing that these cultivators are going to have to do is go out and break the law in order to legitimize their business. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I mean, there are entire counties in southeast Ohio are full of nothing but pot fields. And, you know, they could acquire it that way. But as Lisa points out, that would be illegal too.
Yes.
Lisa, yeah, you know, the experts that we talk to say, you know, marijuana has been in Ohio for a very long time. It's not going to be hard to get the product. But, again, when you're investing hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars in this, it's another risk that you're taking.
Well, and talk about that investment too, Lisa, because that's one of the other things that you covered in the article was how much the fees that the growers are going to pay to have these facilities.
Sure. You know, just to file an application was $20,000 for these large cultivators. And if you didn't win a license like James Gould and others, you lost that $20,000. But you also had to show that you had, sound financial footing, that you had amassed a group of investors that had enough wherewithal financially to see this through. And so there were teams out there working to raise $15 million, $25 million, et cetera, to carry, you know, to show that they had the financial wherewithal to run these operations. And it's the amount of money that it takes to get these operations off the ground is substantial. And again, when you start seeing bumps in the road as the program comes together, if you're an investor, you are hitting the caution button quickly.
Joe, it's going to be very interesting to see how all this pans out.
Yeah, well, you know, when you're looking at some of these groups that did get the money did get the license and wondering if they had the money, I mean, some questions have been raised about that. I mean, whether they will come up with the money, mm-hmm. And whether they did demonstrate that they had the financial footing. So, I mean, it is really interesting, and the bottom line is that there are a lot of people in Ohio who want medical marijuana, and for those folks, who have been waiting for it for a while, this is definitely a setback.
Lisa, thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
WCPO.com reporter Lisa Bernard-Kuhn. And we will continue our review of the news with Joe Ingles and Howard Wilkinson after this. You can join us 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining us to discuss this week's top stories in the tri-state are Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau reporter Joe Ingles and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And we've got some new developments in the Ohio governor's race. Richard Cordray's getting in. Much to no one's surprise at this point, Howard.
To absolutely no one's surprise. It was just a matter of time. He was in a position at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau in Washington, a federal job, a Hatch Act job, where he couldn't engage in partisan politics. And on November 24th, he left that job. And then soon thereafter, he announced his candidacy and has embarked on a statewide tour. I had a long talk with Rich yesterday about his campaign and about the challenges he faces and whether or not, in fact, as some people assume, he automatically becomes the front runner. I think he becomes a front runner in terms of name recognition among Democrats because he has served as state treasurer. He was elected state treasurer. He was elected once as attorney general and then lost to Mike DeWine in 2010 by only a percentage point in a year when Democrats weren't doing very well. So he's got some experience. But I don't think anybody's going to just hand this to him. It doesn't seem to me that the four candidates who have been actively campaigning for months and months now are inclined at this point to get out of his way.
Joe, what do you think this means for the other candidates on the Democratic side?
Well, I think that Howard's absolutely right. I mean, you know, there is some experience here in Cordray that the other candidates don't have. However, Cordray's been away for a while. I mean, he hasn't been around. So it's like, you know, what have you done for me lately? And the other candidates are, you know, bringing up some of the they're bringing up some ideas that haven't been expressed and going after, you know, different going in their campaigns in different ways to try to attract different constituencies. I think one of the things that we're going to see really quickly is the money. Richard Cordray has a lot of ties to Washington, and when he was making his announcement on Tuesday, he name-dropped President Obama several times.
Yes.
And President Obama has already cut a video for Richard Cordray. And there's, you know, some behind-the-scenes work with him.
He's also got support from Elizabeth Warren, too, as
yes.
well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you can bet that Bernie Sanders will be next.
Yep, yep. And with that kind of backing, I mean, that's something that the others don't have. And that kind of backing also means money.
Yes.
And so that's going to be the key thing, because the four Democrats that have been in the race already, and I'm talking Betty Sutton, Nan Whaley, Joe Schiavone, and Connie Pillich, all four of them have had difficulties raising the amount of money that's needed to really do well in a campaign.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be, you know, you're looking at on the Republican side, you know, where they have millions and millions of dollars in this new Mike DeWine / John Husted ticket. And nobody on the Democratic side can come anywhere near that.
Yeah, it's about $9 million.
Right,
that
about Husted $9 million between
have,
the two of them. And, you know, you got DeWine running for governor and you've got Husted as his running mate. And the only person who can compete in those that high of an atmosphere is Rich Cordray on the Democratic side because of all those connections. And I think you're going to see Barack Obama. You're going to see Elizabeth Warren. I think maybe eventually Bernie Sanders come into Ohio, do fundraising events, but also do public, you know, rallies and go after that Democratic vote. It's going to be really difficult. Now, whether or not this field thins out is a still an open question. I'm not sure yet. I think if it stays a large field of candidates, like five or six candidates on the ballot, that's probably good for Cordray because he is the one that has the more experience as a statewide candidate. Some of the other candidates have like regional appeal, like Nan Whaley in the Dayton area and Connie Pillich in the Cincinnati area. But he's got the experience of running several times statewide. And that's a big advantage.
Yeah, and he held the Attorney General's office for several years.
Right. And you could end up, you know, if you've got five or six candidates on the ballot, you could end up winning a primary with about 30% of the vote. And that's that's a kind of a chip shot.
Joe, do you think that Cordray's squabble with President Trump about who's going to run the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau since he's leaving it, do you think that whole squabble helps Cordray, at least with his base? They view him as being somebody who's going to fight the system or fight back, be scrappy?
Yeah, it might help him a little bit, but I've also seen a lot of comments of people who are in one of the other camps who say, why did Cordray leave? He should have stayed there and fought. Now, you know, granted, he was kind of at the end of it because he couldn't have stayed there much longer, a few more months, and he would have had to be out of there. But that whole, that people look at that and they think, oh, this whole squabble, you know, Rich, you know, he was trying to do the right thing. The president's, you know, come down on him. And so he does kind of get a little bit of traction maybe from that.
Joe, you remember on when he made the announcement to staff in Washington that he was going to leave.
Right.
I mean, it didn't take but 2 hours before all of the other Democratic candidates had been heard from.
Right.
And they were all saying, essentially, he's abandoned his post. You know, mm-hmm. he was doing this good job in Washington, and he's walking away from it, blah, 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 to go, come back and be a politician in Ohio. But, you know, I talked to him yesterday about this, and he said, look, I had this experience over 6 years. I have a message for voters, which I think will resonate particularly with Democratic primary voters, because as head of that bureau, he recovered $12 billion for consumers from shady payday lenders, from financial institutions that were doing things the wrong way. And that money went back into the pockets of the people, $12 billion. That's a pretty good populist-type message
right.
to run on statewide.
Now,
and you can bet he's going to do it.
And so far, the GOP reaction to Cordray's entry, what are we hearing about that?
Oh, well, I mean, they're calling him every name in a book. They're calling him, you know, a swamp creature. The Ohio Republican Party has termed him a swamp creature.
Crooked Cordray.
That's
original,
like,
isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the crooked Hillary thing turned on to its head to crooked. Now it's Crooked Cordray. They actually have a website up, and they're just trying to paint him as somebody who was a Washington bureaucrat who was, you know, just running roughshod over, you know, these poor bankers and payday lenders.
But to be fair, I mean, they've been campaigning against Cordray
for
even
months.
When Cordray was there, you know, the CFPB chief. They were, it's probably since last summer, I think.
Absolutely. And I asked him about that, too. And I said, you know, this started a long time ago, Rich. I mean, these people were running, you know, ads and sending out press releases, putting up websites for many months before you left. I said, what's that tell you? And his answer to it was, well, it means they're worried about me. They're worried that
they view him as
the
biggest threat. Yeah.
They worry about him as the biggest threat because you never, and correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, but I never once heard a word out of the RGA or the Ohio Republican Party or any of these other groups about any of the other four candidates.
Yeah, I don't remember hearing anything either. I mean, maybe there was, and I just don't remember. But
no, I mean, it was all about Cordray.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it is.
So when will the other candidates have to start naming their running mates or teaming up and forming their tickets?
Soon.
Okay.
I mean,
February 7th
is
the deadline for filing.
Right.
Yeah.
So
and typically when you file, you have that information.
Yeah, and I suppose one of the present candidates could end up being, you know, somebody else's running mate, you know, similar to what's happened on the Republican side. I just don't know at this point. There are other people that, say, a Rich Cordray might look at around the state. But nonetheless, if you are going to run for governor and be in the primary in May— by February 7th, you have to file not only as a candidate for governor, but you have to file a name of your running mate for lieutenant governor. And that's just, you know, the way it is. Mm-hmm.
Joe, what about Supreme Court Justice Bill O'Neill? Does he plan to leave the race now that Cordray is in? Do we know what his intentions are at this point?
No, he's actually announced he is running for governor, and just this morning he formally submitted his resignation at the Supreme Court. Now, that doesn't mean he's leaving the court right away. That means that he's staying there until, I believe it was the 23rd of January. It's around the end of January. But he's already, this has happened a couple weeks ago, where the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court had a chat with him, and we see from emails that came about that we just got this morning that she was not, Maureen O'Connor was not at all happy about, you know, O'Neill, I think it was the end of October, he had announced he was going to run, and he put out some policy statements as to what he'd like to do as governor. Yes. Well, you can't do that when you're running on the court. Or running for governor, and you're on the court. So there were questions about, did he violate the canons, blah, blah, blah. And actually, Chief Justice O'Connor said, you know, this is not proper. You cannot do this. So at that point, a couple weeks ago, he said, okay, I'm going to recuse myself of any new business coming before the court, and I'm only going to participate in those cases that we've already heard. And so that's where he is right now, and he's saying he's going to stay on the court until the end of January or near the end of January. He's going to be part of the cases he's already heard, but he's also going to campaign for governor. But we don't know if someone's going to force him to get off, though.
Yeah. But he keeps adding this caveat about if Rich Cordray or some other Democratic candidate comes out in favor of things like legalizing marijuana, which he's in favor of, then possibly he would get out of the race. I mean, you just don't know.
There's a lot of caveats that have been added
he's throwing,
there.
And yeah. He's throwing all these ifs, ands, and buts into the thing.
You think he's angling for something, Howard or Joe?
I don't know what for. I mean, the fact, you know, the business with the Facebook post several weeks ago where, you know, he was talking about Al Franken's situation. He was trying to defend him, and he starts going on about his own sexual exploits with 50 different women over the years. And people were just absolutely appalled by this. And the Republicans didn't have to say a word because it was Democrats, the other Democratic candidates for governor and the Democratic Party chairman in Ohio and everybody else who was going after him and saying, no, this is just absolutely beyond the pale. And
he had been completely tone deaf, completely tone deaf.
Oh, yeah. And he had to, and in the end, he had to apologize. Of course, he took it down from his Facebook page, but it was absolutely appalling. And you can't run away from something like that. That's not going to go away.
Right. Joe, and even yesterday when I posted my stories from yesterday on Twitter, people were responding with Twitter. You know, Twitter's great for sarcasm, but one of the things that they kept responding about was this story of, you know, these women and the beautiful women, very beautiful women and that sort of thing. So it's out there, and people are not going to forget that.
And Joe, I wanted to ask you too, what is the latest over the string of resignations at the State House over sexual misconduct and other misbehaviors? What's going on with that right now?
Well, that's been pretty quiet this week. You know, we've had the string of resignations last week and you know, earlier or late last month. But right now, that's pretty quiet. They're waiting. I think everyone's kind of waiting to see what comes about, you know, where this goes. We haven't heard a whole lot. We're being told that the leadership wants to do sexual harassment training with the legislators. We don't know what that's going to exactly entail at this point, but they want to move that direction. But, you know, everyone's just kind of waiting to see who knew what and when. And there are, I don't know how many people who have public records requests. I feel, you know, like the staff for all of the people in charge around here, they have to be overwhelmed with all the public records requests that are out there to find out, you know, what people knew and when.
Are there any outside groups calling for investigations?
Well, there's been groups calling for investigation from the beginning, I mean, they're calling for investigation, but, you know, until we get some more details, it's really hard to pin down where that goes and exactly how that's going to proceed.
Joe and Howard, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau reporter Joe Ingles and WVXU politics reporter Howard Wilkinson. Coming up, Cincinnati police investigating a complaint against the local FOP president. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. It's our weekly review of local news. Joining us now, WCPO.com reporters Amanda Seitz and Paula Christian, and Cincinnati Inquirer Race and Communities reporter Mark Kernute. You can be part of our conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Mark, Amanda, and Paula, thank you all for being here this afternoon. Good
Thanks
to see
for
everybody.
Having me. Thank you.
Mark, let's start by talking about what's going on with Cincinnati FOP President Dan Hills. He finds himself under investigation, and what's this about?
It goes back, Mark, to a roll call on November 26th, the Sunday night after Thanksgiving, when FOP President Dan Hills was invited to the third shift roll call at District 4 in Avondale. There had been a complaint.